Welcome back to another Falls Cast brought to you by the Falls Free Press in beautiful Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, where today, Tuesday, September 15th, has actually been a really nice day. This morning it was kind of chilly, but it seems to have improved. We're here with some of our favorite Falls casters, including Mike Searle.
Hello.
Suzanne Searle.
Hello.
And Stephen Mulay.
Hello.
As Alex has provided me, I am allowed to make fun of whoever is here and whoever is not here. I am going to be
Alex.
Here.
Alex.
Come on, let's do Alex.
Make fun of Alex.
Unfortunately, Alex Hall is not here on this episode, but he is having the pleasure of editing what I'm sure is going to be an entertaining episode. Either trying to edit or just listen to
lawlessness.
It.
Lawlessness.
Still hate you. We still hate him. Or at least I still hate him.
I can't actually say that with a straight face like Mike. I can't say that.
And as always, be sure to stay tuned after the roundtable discussion, where we will have an interview. This time with Cindy Michael, owner and operator of Harps and Sissels Yarn and Gift Emporium on Portage Trail.
Say that 10 times, really fast.
Honestly, I was shocked that I could even say it one time with all the S's.
I'm glad you had to say it, not me.
All right, let's get into it. So Silver Lake is receiving $165,212 in COVID-19 funds from Summit County and will be using $134,000 of that money to purchase equipment and software that will make it possible for village employees to work from home. $11,163 of the funds are being used to purchase tablets that will allow police officers to file reports from their cruisers. Currently, Cuyahoga Falls officers call the reports into an answering machine type service, and the reports are then transcribed by somebody afterwards. There are no plans to send the workers home to work remotely, but apparently the new equipment and software will allow them to do that if the situation worsens. Meanwhile, social distancing and mask wearing is in effect, and the village hall is closed to the public besides an $8,000 barrier being constructed to create separation between village employees and visitors. Some funds were also used to buy disinfectant foggers and UV lights. So, do you guys think that this expenditure seems warranted this late in the pandemic? Do you think it's going to get worse, or do you think this is just an expensive preparation?
Yes, it's going to get worse.
I agree. It's going to get worse. And yeah. I do think that since they probably asked for the money, asked for the grant, and it could have been months and months ago, because we were talking about red tape here in the government. Mm. Maybe they're just getting the money now. And so they made the announcement now. But they probably knew what they're getting and buying a while back.
Yeah, this seems like a price that they would have asked for at the beginning.
Yeah,
when it
of all this
was,
stuff
when it was predicted to be really, really bad.
Has the Falls gotten any of this stuff? They don't have. Obviously, they're not using this kind of system at all. Sounds like it's a great efficient system, and it would be great for COVID. But you know, it's expensive.
And honestly, for me, it kind of baffles me that we have officers that they have laptops in their vehicles, from what I understand. Now, we have to purchase tablets, or Silver Lake has to purchase tablets to do the reports and whatnot on. Why don't they have the availability to do that from within a cruiser?
Maybe it's a different system. Maybe it's maybe that system's designed for looking up, somebody's past criminal history and doing whatnot. Other stuff. So it's a completely different system. That's what I'm thinking. Not knowing anything about it. That's just a guess, but maybe they're not compatible, because that system could be, software could be ancient. Think about how long they've had those things in their car.
Yeah. They just recently got new radio systems, to upgrade everything. So that's a good possibility.
I knew a few engineers, and sometimes they say the people come with them with projects that are like, this is ancient and hardly anybody knows the software language anymore. And they got to fix some old ancient thing. And
so do you guys think the $8,000 barrier was a little exorbitant, or do you think maybe we could have gotten a better deal, or they could have gotten a better deal, I should say. I mean, I don't know what the average cost of a barrier is and what this barrier entails. Like, is this just a brand new entryway, or is there more to it that, you know, gold, what are your guys' thoughts on that?
Gold-plated bricks. That's what I'm thinking.
Gold-plated bricks.
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I purchase things for my company. And that
$800 screwdriver.
$8,000 for barriers doesn't seem like it's a lot when you're talking about contractors and construction.
Yeah,
right. True. Yeah, and also, what kind of barriers? I mean, are we talking exactly. ones with, you know, temperature sensing? Like at our work, we're going to be installing, you know, thermal scanners as you walk in through the building. You know, and it could be very well, you know, around $8,000 for that. So that could be something that they may be doing also.
I'm actually surprised it's only $8,000, especially if the contractor knows they're doing for city work.
Yeah.
So, sure.
Especially if it sure. was something like that.
Mm.
I look at barrier, I'm just thinking, you know, like a piece of plexiglass, you know, and an extra wall in between.
True, but it could be a set of doors, you know, it could be like an actual, you know, not an atrium or what's the word? I don't want to say porticolis, but, you know. It could be some kind of pass way that, you know, it could be a completely new front entrance. So that could justify the $8,000.
Yeah. A new grand entrance with a spiral staircase.
With a spiral staircase. Does it have a trap door?
Yeah. And a big, beautiful chandelier that somebody has to dust every month.
Oh.
Is there a button where we'll have a trap door that leads to the laser headed sharks in the pool underneath?
No, I think that maybe that was extra cost and they couldn't afford it, so they might have canceled that.
I mean, what is Silver Lake? You keep, no.
The Stowe Municipal Court, which serves the Falls, plus Boston Heights and Boston Township, Hudson, Macedonia, Monroe Falls, Northfield Center, Township, Peninsula, and all the way to Timbuktu, apparently, has taken measures to allow jurors to start being called again and making sure that they're safe from the pandemic while they serve. They've put partitions up between the jurors and required masks be worn, and everything is being cleaned and sanitized regularly. The attorneys now must stand at a podium and not approach the jury. And a defense attorney has suggested that the pandemic might produce a situation where the only jurors willing to serve are virus hoaxers, quote unquote. This attorney was worried that these individuals may be more likely to be pro-police and pro-prosecutors, which stacks against the defendants. So, given the issues here, you know, we've all at least been called to jury duty, whether or not picked for it. Would we serve in a jury if during the pandemic, if we're called?
I would do it. Obviously masked, and if they're going to take the precautions needed, and I'm going to wear a mask, and it sounds like they're doing their due diligence from a lot of it, because they have to, I would do it. But, you know, I'm not 75 years old and at higher risk either. So there's that. And yes, as far as what the defense attorney was complaining about, first thing I was thinking about was most people, there would be a lot of people out there that are not going to be willing to serve on a jury because they are concerned about the COVID thing, contracting it and being exposed to it. And, you know, when you're in a public building like that with a bunch of other people, that's a lot higher risk than in, you know, a lot of other places. So I understand that. And, you know, and I guess the defense attorney was a nice way of putting the people who like authoritarian thinking and they lean that way tend to be anti-maskers. And I guess that's what he's trying to say. And if you're a defense attorney, that would be a big concern.
Yeah, I could see that. And I'm kind of curious, are they taking regular breaks during this to re-sanitize the, you know, benches, whatever, you know, chairs, blah, 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 fog the room? I mean, is this, you know, are they doing shorter, you know, I've never actually been in a jury, so I don't know how long. Are you there from 8 to 4, you know, with a lunch break? I mean, are they doing shorter hours then, you know, for the actual trials, or shorter sessions, I should say? You know, that's kind of curious about that. I mean,
those are all valid questions. And I think we probably have to talk to somebody who was involved directly in the planning to get the details. Cause obviously it wasn't in the article.
Yeah.
You know, whether the reporter was told all those things, who knows, or maybe he just received a press release. It's probably.
Yeah. He may not have, they might not know either. They might just be playing by ear a little bit too, you know,
They would have to plan some of it out by now. You know,
I would hope.
Yeah. I would imagine they probably go in and clean everything down and spray it down every day, and they would have to. I mean, whether they're actually going to do a good job at it, who knows? I mean, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you watch at some of these stores, you know, you go in, you use your card, whatever, you touch a thing, and they come around, they wipe it off and clean it, you know.
Yep. And I always carry a little vial of Purell, it's always in my pocket.
I do wonder with this, it says the only people willing to serve on a jury. You know, usually we're not necessarily, you know, willing to come in. You just get called.
Yeah.
So I'm curious how they're, you know, picking jurors, and the people who do have conditions that being in a courtroom for a long time, you know, around a lot of people who may or may not have contracted COVID could be dangerous.
And the best of times they, you know, you really don't want to serve in a jury. Most people don't. I mean, you get paid crap to do it, and you have to take off work. And, you know, it's just not a fun situation to go sit in this room surrounded by people you don't know, waiting to be called in. And if you do get called on a jury, you know, it's not normally something that somebody wants to do on the best of terms. So I'm assuming that you were able to use the reasoning for not serving jury if you have some kind of health condition or fear of getting COVID.
I do worry that this could be a flimsy excuse to get out of jury duty too, though.
Of course, people are going to take advantage of it, but a lot of it's they had to loosen the restrictions because of COVID to the people who were allowed to, you know, the list of excuses that you're allowed to get out of jury duty. It used to be a small list, but it wasn't that hard to get out of it before. But you know, they still get to having a reasonable excuse. And this time, I bet you they had to loosen that up significantly, which could, you know, increase the problem of having only certain people serve.
Well, that, and it's, I'm sure the random selection is going to be, you know,
they're going to have to go
100 people. You're going 50.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, because
they're going to have to ask a lot more people in order to do it, order to get the people that they need in order for the jury.
Only
it's interesting to see the stereotype of this, where they said the pro police, pro prosecutors, and the virus hoaxers.
Well, we know what that's code word for.
Know what that's code for, and I don't think any of us would actually disagree with that, right? I mean,
no,
unfortunately,
not in this group.
Not for this group. So. I mean, I think it kind of maybe helps get some people that may use the excuse of the virus to get out of jury duty less of an excuse to sit on a jury. I mean, we need fair trials, and that's a problem in our society, a big problem in our society. And, you know,
it's a big problem in general without a pandemic. But
exactly. Exactly. So,
yeah, well, you can't stop the court system forever. That's the problem.
True.
You have to.
True.
Although there's somebody sitting in jail waiting for a year in order to go on trial before he's actually. I'm sure there's situations like that are playing out right now for people who are not on bail, out on bail, can't get out on bail for whatever reason, and they're in jail and they have to stay in jail until their court date.
Well, here's a stupid thing. I mean, why can't they do virtual?
Good question.
I mean, that would. You know, you could do, if you're doing virtual learning, you know, and there's a fair amount of courts where you're doing a virtual thing in front of a judge or a magistrate before, you know, you actually go to trial and whatnot. Why can't you do this with jury? I mean, even if you had to be at the courthouse or whatever, you could put them in a room or put like maybe two people in a good sized room where you can barricade and each has their own area. You know, who's to say that you actually, everybody has to be in the same room. You know, you could, theory, do it virtually. You know, if you're worried about, you know, being able to serve and being able to do all this, I mean, I don't know. It's just an idea, but
yeah, we have the technology. Let's use it. A Back in Blue rally is planned at the Rubber City Harley-Davidson dealership on Howe Avenue in Cuyahoga Falls, September 24th at 6 p.m. The organizer is named Jim Culver, and the rally is linked to his push to paint Back to Blue in front of the Harold K. Stubbs Justice Center in Akron. The push is touted as a measure to show support for police, but feels a bit more like a response to the large Black Lives Matter painted on the road in Akron, Northside. Especially since Culver said the mural needs to be timely to be effective. He did say it's not against anything. Culver has created displays of bras dangling above the high-level bridge between Akron and the Falls for Breast Cancer Awareness, among other public displays. Akron, meanwhile, created a public art policy with an as-yet-undetermined board to approve projects without the board in place. The Back and Blue mural project seems to be suspended. Board members should be chosen soon as the council was on August recess. The Northside Black Lives Matter mural was completed before the public art policy was adopted. But Culver and others believe the city is hiding behind the public art policy to keep the Back and Blue mural from moving forward.
In that article, he was talking about how he was claiming that this is not an anti BLM. This is just a pro police. Right. He did try to walk that line to try to seem more legitimate. Now, whether you believe him or not is another thing, which I tend to not believe him. And maybe even if he did mean that, many of the people who are going to show up and go to this do not feel that way. I can pretty much guarantee that. Considering
they seem to be at odds, don't they? You
can back the police and still BLM.
Correct.
Right. Basically, if you understand what BLM is, it's anti-police brutality.
Yep.
Well, yeah, you can still back the Blue Lives Matter. Absolutely.
But doesn't it seem like whenever somebody says back Black Lives Matter, they say
it's a
Blue
back.
Lives Matter.
Yep. Yes, it's a clapback. Yeah. Most people use it as an anti-BLM calling card. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And that's what it is. But it doesn't have to be, you know, unless you're just ideally, you know, unless you have an issue seeing both sides. There's good cops and bad cops. I mean, you know, so whatever, you can back the good ones and still hate on the bad ones.
I think there seems to be a lot of people that you're either this or that.
No, you know? there's a lot of gray area in the world.
There's a lot of gray, but it seems like if you say you back the blue, all of a sudden you hate Black Lives Matter. If you say you're for Black Lives Matter, you hate all police. And it's not necessarily like that. Yeah. And there's a lot of people, you know, younger that I've seen that are, you know, F the cops and this and that and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, it doesn't.
Well, I mean,
it doesn't have to be that, you know,
if they had that experience in life where that maybe anecdotally they experienced the bad side of the policing, then you can't say, yeah, I blame them from feeling that way. And I never had that experience with police officers, so I don't personally feel that way. You know, all the police officers that I've met, I like them. They're good guys. So,
I mean, I like them, and I've had a couple bad experiences, but it could have just been the guy having a bad day. But then again, I wasn't worried about getting pulled out of the car and clubbed or shot or whatever, right. You know?
Yes.
So that's the big difference, you know? I mean, it was just bad timing, bad whatever, and it was just, it is what it is, you know, but like I said, you know, it's like, I don't have to worry about coming out dead from the incident.
Yeah. I've never worried about it. So,
neither have I, and neither is my wife or my kids.
Yeah.
You know, let yet every single black person I've talked to since since I realized this personally, that this is a problem, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, I wasn't aware until maybe a year or two ago. Everyone I've ever asked, they say yes. I've been profiled.
Mm-hmm. You know. We sit in our white privileged bubble, and we don't experience that. We don't know. And now these stories are coming out, and you hear that almost every single black person that you talk to has the exact same experience when it comes to the fear of the cops, or had a bad, I don't want to say the exact same experience, but they had some kind of bad experience with dealing with a police officer. And it just shocks me. And it shocks my privilege kind of right out of me.
I'm kind of curious, like thinking about it. It's like, do you think that Akron City Council is putting a lot of red tape in the way to kind of push this aside, you know, to not bring awareness to it and to that, you know, holding it at a Harley dealership.
Well, the Harley dealership maybe just seems like because maybe they want to have a bike ride. Maybe they want to have a back the police cruise with their motorcycles. That's a common
thing. Yeah, you know, that's possible. And
whatever. I don't really care where they meet. At least I'm just kind of glad it's not downtown. So
downtown Akron or downtown Cuyahoga Falls?
Downtown Cuyahoga Falls.
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, no. As far as what Akron has done, in order, maybe they purposely did it. Maybe they did, and maybe they didn't. Who knows? How long has this council been in the planning? This city art grant art council. I guess I don't really know the specific name. How long has that been in the planning? Was this recent? Was it after he tried to put in the permit? Was it before the permit? All the timing. I don't know what the.
I think that was the timing issue.
Yeah. Who knows? I don't know what specifically the timing is. So you know, maybe they did it on purpose. Maybe they didn't. Maybe it's been planning for a while and they just got around to doing it now. Who knows?
I think a lot of it was in the works and then COVID hit and everything went.
Yes.
Well, hit the fan, you know?
Yeah, that's true. So whatever. I don't know. I think the guys just spilled milk complaining about it personally.
Possibly.
But to say that I might feel pissed if it happened to me, probably. Maybe I'm looking at a way to complain about it. You know, he's just, it's a way to get PR on his side and get people fired up. Look what they're doing. They're preventing it. And, you know, so, you know, he's playing, even it could be true or not, doesn't matter. He's using it as an angle.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's legitimate or not, it's still an angle for PR on his side to get people fired up. So, and, you know, I would probably do the same thing if I was an organizer too and doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
To say it's, you know, so whatever. He's just using his cards he's dealt.
Or it's another one of those, you know, Blue Lives Matter, All Lives Matter. Well, of course they do. You know, and that's where I think he's maybe spinning it towards that direction. But it's like, it's nothing against,
That's it, probably in his nature to do that too.
So. It might be.
So yes. It's a big enough parking lot to hold social distancing unless they have way too many people.
I have a feeling there's not going to be much social distancing or masks, but that's just opinion. Yeah. And it could be very biased, but you know, I don't think that's going to be.
And that's why I brought up the question: do you think they chose the Harley dealership because of the quote unquote personality that people think bikers have? You know, they're
maybe it was offered to him as a spot. Here, you can come use our parking lot, and it's free.
Okay,
and
that could be. Yeah,
and then he doesn't have to worry about a permit because it's private.
Sure.
Exactly.
Sure. And that's a good question that, you know, we should probably find out, you know, I'm curious was it a choice or was it just offered, you know?
That's something you'd have to probably contact him, you know, and who knows whether he would actually answer it honestly. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that parking lot's been used for a ton of different things over the years.
I'm sure. Yeah. It's a large parking lot. That's the old Circuit City.
Yeah.
I drive by it all the time. The parking lot's almost always all completely empty. I'm like, how's that place stay in business? I guess they do. So,
yeah.
Well, speaking of that, you know, there's no one ever there. Well, that's a good way. Hey, the whole parking lot, we can get some business.
True.
Yeah.
I just hope that it goes well, that there's not any issues.
I hope it's peaceful and, you know, they can. Sure. Yeah. And That's not on us. So, you know, we're not involved in that. So hopefully they can do it. And I don't see why they couldn't, unless there's going to be a bunch of counter protesters. And we haven't heard anything about that. There could be. Absolutely. Sidewalk. And they could be on the sidewalk because you're allowed to be on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So from that, we go into what I am going to just cave in and let Alex call Bart's Arts Corner.
Don't. No. Oh. No.
Bart's
Arts
Corner.
Unless someone has a better idea, write to us. Let us know.
Bart, go sit in the corner. Go sit in the corner.
Bad Bart.
Bart with the art.
No.
Bart brings the art. Bart, I don't know.
Brings the art, and then sometimes he might fart while he's looking at the art, and then
Bart had the art.
And this is exactly why he didn't want it to be called that.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is exactly why Alex is never going to leave us alone again.
Well, it is kind of catchy, so you know, and it's you know, which makes it. Sometimes something to make it memorable, you have to make it a little cheesy.
Exactly.
Catchy. Yeah. So, you know, whatever. It works. You just don't like it.
Art.
So after a lot of effort to create the public arch master plan last year, plus the $50,000 from the community development block grant that was paid to a public arch consultant, the pandemic has now put all projects on hold until next year. Even with some specific projects being delayed, though, a public art board is being created to determine how public art is going to be displayed in the city. The Planning Commission has also had to approve text amendments for public art projects, which could include art displayed in divided street mediums and on fences. Developers will also gain certain incentives to incorporate the art into their new developments. And public art has been on display in various forms inside City Hall for a while. Plus the Blue Heron statue that was just put up at Waterworks Park last year. Planner wraps downtown that were just put up last week, I assume, because last weekend they did the whole Keep It Green events with planting things on Front Street. Planner wraps are being developed as part of a competition, and the Chalk It Up project, which is going to be, has already happened, and hopefully next year we'll have the Chalk Festival. So with all of this, plus like what we talked about last week with what's going on over at the Jenks building, what do we think about the public art and what we might end up with public art in here coming next year?
I say bring it on. We need to bring as much art as we can in here.
I agree. Art it up, baby. Every single space and little section and do
bigger murals. Yep. We see like, you know, on the side of Metropolis and all that, just painted up. Like, is it Portsmouth that does that? Has those murals down on their walls?
I think the side of the Cuyahoga Valley Art Center screams for a giant mural.
Yeah, especially there. Especially there.
And that's been there for so long.
It has. And it's an art gallery, you know, teaching place. So it's, I mean, it'd be perfect.
Or like that little corridor down where the second stage is, down by the Levinson building and all You know, they could do murals on both those sides, you know, and have a nice little area right there, you know. Unless that new speakeasy place is going to make that into like a little patio or something. I don't know if they're going to have the rights to do that, but, you know, because being the sidewalk and stuff.
I don't even know whether if they own that property, who knows? They could have a certain amount of footage.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they do, they could do something art-wise.
Yeah, right there. That'd be really cool.
Art it up.
I mean, what else do we know? Like, what else besides the chalk and any kind of murals and stuff was going up? I mean, were they talking about like sculptures around town or?
I know they were talking about that when they created the Public Arts Commission last year, but I don't think they ever actually had any plans yet.
Any plans or artists or anything?
I thought they had everything planned out and they just basically postponed everything that was going to happen for another year. Is that what they did? That was my
understanding. That may have been it in the, I haven't heard anything sculpture-wise, though.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't either. I'm sure they have some plans, but who knows if they've been there. Maybe they haven't been announced. I'm sure they have some more stuff going on. They would have to.
You must find out.
Meanwhile, as of this episode coming out, Upfront Art Space, where it's located right now on Front Street, is closed. They are closed until they reopen on Portage Trail on September 25th. So now they have a bigger space, which is going to be a lot easier for framing. It's easier to get artwork in and out and has wheelchair accessibility because they'll be on the main floor. They will be right between Hope Soap and Harps and Sissels. The plans for the new shop, according to Kay Phelps, she said they're launching an online framing platform that will allow people to upload a photo, choose what kind of frame and mats they want online, and then they'll be able to have it shipped or come and pick it up. Meanwhile, their first show is, the opening is going to be on September 25th, their first day open, and it's going to be called Windows, and is being curated by a Youngstown artist, Craig Duster.
Group show? Is that what this is?
It's the first show in the space. I believe it's a group show, but this artist from Youngstown is curating it. And I guess this is his first show in Cuyahoga Falls.
Is he curating or is it all his work?
He said he's curating it.
Okay.
Well, here's
but this
a
is the
question.
First time he's been in any show in Cuyahoga Falls.
Oh, okay. Well, just means he wasn't in Studio 2091 is what it means.
Well, he's from Youngstown.
Sure.
Stupid question. As far as the framing, are they doing all types of frames, like photos, artwork? Does it matter?
I am gathering. Well, they already do artwork as it is, but okay. It looks like now they're. It says you can upload a photo, so it looks like they might even be printing them.
That's what I was curious. Are they doing like print, or are they just, you know, given the dimensions, they make a frame. What format or what media are you doing? And
yeah,
they go from there. And.
And right before, they only had a small desk in which they did all the framing. So now they at least have a little bit more space to work.
Speaking That's a great service. I think that would be pretty cool to do.
It's cool. It's a neat service. It's obviously, it sounds like it's the only one in the Falls that will offer the online option. And and my point about, I've done lots of framing before personally for my own work. And having a small surface to work on to do framing, it's no bueno. It's not fun. It's hard to do. I used to end up working on the floor as much as I did on my table when I only had a small surface. So yeah, I can imagine they're probably feeling pretty wonderful about having a larger space in order to work in. For framing, it's just essential.
Stretch out and
yeah, you can't. I mean, especially you're doing a big frame. It's you have a small area to do it. You know, you have to have multiple surfaces. You have the mat over here and then the print, and you have to have in the frame and the glass, and you know, it takes up a lot of space in order to do it right. But I wish her luck. I hope it works well. I'll have to check out the space.
So I'm going to skip over our last thing in our outline. and we'll just say, be sure to check out our website. We've got a couple new articles up there. One of them being my review of the new film, Bill and Ted Face the Music. Can read my synopsis of the movie and what I thought of it. And finally, be sure to stay tuned after this roundtable for my interview with Cindy Michael, owner and operator of Harps and Sissels Yarn and Gift Emporium. So we want to thank our listeners for joining us this week. If you have any idea for someone we should interview or topics we should discuss, let us know. Drop us a line at falls3press@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook. And remember, we're always in the market for article submissions. So be sure to email us those as you have ideas. For now, we'll say goodbye and hope you'll join us next week. Bye.
Bye. Later.
Later.
Be excellent to each other.
Nice.
He wanted us to say
be
that.
Be excellent to each other.
Bogus.
Bogus.
Dude.
Bye.
Later.
And we're back this time on the Falls Cast. I am here interviewing Cindy Michael, owner and operator of Harps and Sissels Yarn and Gift Emporium. And this time, the S's did not trick me up. I had issues with it yesterday. So, Cindy, how long has Harps and Sissels been in business on Portage?
We just celebrated our 6th anniversary last month.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
For anyone who hasn't come into the shop, what is Harps and Sissels?
We are a boutique specialty yarn shop. Basically, that's what we sell the most. We do have some gift items and that sort of thing, but mostly we cater to the knitters and crocheters in Northeast Ohio.
Wonderful.
Do classes when there's not a pandemic. We do lots of classes. We do lots of group gatherings. We do lots of events, but this is not a typical year. So that's kind of fallen by the wayside for now, but we'll get back up and going once things calm down.
Hopefully soon.
Yes, hopefully soon.
How did you get into the yarn business?
It's kind of, I didn't like go out to get into this business. I lost my job. I was a corporate project manager and did not enjoy what I was doing. And my position was eliminated. And the next day I decided I was just going to open a yarn shop and do something that made me happy. And it has for 6 years now.
Have you always been a crafter?
Yes. Oh. I've always had crafting things going on. And I've crocheted since I was probably 10. So that's always been something I enjoy. And I just felt like, you know, that was the path that I needed to take. And it's been a good one.
I recently, within the last few years, started learning to crochet. And it's definitely, it makes you not focus on other things. I still haven't been able to get past doing a couple rows because I seem to pull it too tight.
Well, when we get classes going back up, you'll have to come in and take a class. We have an amazing crochet instructor, and she will be happy to get you going.
Yeah, and before all of this, you guys were having, like, classes bi-weekly, weren't you? Like little clinics?
Oh, those, the knit clinics, yes. We do have those, and we are starting to just, like, dip our toe into doing knit clinics again, and only we're limiting the number of people that can come in. You have to sign up in advance, and we, you know, seat people far enough apart that, you know, things can be safe. We're very cautious about the things that we're doing right now and making sure that our customers are safe. But yes, we're doing the knit clinics now, but we also did lots and lots of knitting classes and crochet classes, and we had group gatherings on Tuesdays and Thursday evenings where, you know, we have a circle of people that would just, you know, hang out and work on their projects together. We used to have a PJ party once a month, and we would stay up until 10 o'clock on a Friday night, and we had a food theme for people that wanted to bring food, and we would do show and tell so people could show off some of the things that they had finished. And it was just a really great group. We usually had between 30 and 50 people attend on a Friday night. So it was a lot of fun. So, and I guess, it will be again.
Yes. So I guess going from back when you had a full house, how has the pandemic affected business?
It made me think outside the box. It made me think about how I could reach my customers when they're not walking in the door. I do a weekly newsletter, so that helped to keep people going, you know, understanding what we were doing and keeping them focused on our business. But we did there's somebody else. I did this thing when we shut down. I did this thing called Quarantine, and it was kind of like a mystery bundle. People would sign up for a different level. They were between $50 and $200, and they would give me one word, and I would put together a package for them based on the one word that they gave me. And that was hugely popular. I was working 10 hours a day during the shutdown just to get them packed up and sent out. So you have to, you know, you've had to learn to think outside the box to, you know, pivot and do things differently. I have a Zoom account now, and we do all of our knitting groups together virtually, but at least we're seeing each other and connecting and communicating, and that's a good thing.
And that's definitely a good way to keep those groups going, even when we have to be distant.
Right. And we, you know, we have people joining us now from Montana and Illinois and Virginia and Kansas. So it's really expanded our circle of friends now, too.
I really do think that's the one good thing that's come out of this. all of these classes and programs are being held online. So now things that are happening across the country or like concerts that people might never have gotten to go to, you know, we can all enjoy together now.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So sometimes you just have to look for the blessings because they're there. Sometimes they're not easy to find, but they're there.
How would, either before or now, how would you set apart Hearts and Thistles from the big box stores like Michael's and Joann's?
There's really not a comparison. The quality of the products that we sell are far and above the products that are sold in the big box stores. And also, we offer service. You know, we will help you find a pattern for the sweater that you want to knit. We will help you find the right yarn. We will give you advice and instruction on how to manage that or what you need to do to set up, you know, prior to knitting the item. So there's a lot more to what we offer, you know, than what the big box stores do. The big box stores are a place where you can go in and buy something off the shelf and leave, but you're not going to get any personalization or assistance there.
And I guess that's really what they rely on, because you always end up coming back to buy more because you didn't get the right thing.
Yes. Yeah. But you will get the right thing at Harps and Thistles.
Good. Right now, you've got the Yarn Discovery Tour going on. Can you talk about that?
So the Yarn Discovery, this is the 13th year, of course, because what other year would it be during 2020? And it is a shop hop or a yarn crawl through Northeast Ohio. And this year there are 11 shops that are participating. And each tourist gets a passport. And in the passport, there's a page for each shop. Now, this year, each page not only lists the hours that shop is open, but their requirements for entering. So what their maximum capacity is. So that way people know if they're only allowed to have five people and there's five people in, they have to wait and to go in. You know, we want to make sure everybody's safe. Masks are required. And hand sanitation. We need to make sure that people are, you know, safe. Anyways, so they're going throughout Northeast Ohio from shop to shop, and each shop will then stamp the passport. Once they've made their purchase, they get their passport stamped. They get a ticket for the baskets. They get stitch markers, which are a thing for knitters and crocheters. They get a special stitch marker that each shop, typically we have a bag, but we're trying to kind of simplify it this year. So we went with the stitch markers. And they just get to experience each shop. And it's a lot of fun because you get to meet the shop owners. You get to see the personalities of each of the shops, you know, because we're all completely different. But we all know each other and we all work together to make this happen every year for our customers.
And I guess that gives people the excuse to go check out other shops, too, if they've been going to the same place all the time.
Right.
They might find that one new thing that they wouldn't have expected to find.
Exactly. We don't all carry the same things. We all carry yarn, but, you know, we might carry different brands of yarn or different indie dyers because that's a thing, you know, that there are people that hand dye yarn. And that's very, people really like the hand dyed yarn. So, and this year we have a custom color that we had dyed by an indie dyer in Duluth, Minnesota called Three Irish Girls Yarn. And it's been hugely popular, hugely popular. So just gives them something to do. And we figured this year, with everything shut down and closed down and canceled, that if we could offer this to them, it would, you know, at least it would be something to do.
What kind of yarn is it that other than just like is it really thin yarn that they dyed, or?
It's not necessarily thin yarn. It's typically wool, but it is. I don't know how to describe it. They hand dye the yarn. They take natural colored yarn, and they pour the dye over it in different color combinations to create. You have to come in and see it. So this year, Three Irish Girls is really good at creating custom colors based on a photograph. Sorry, I got a frog in my throat. So I sent her a photograph of the COVID virus, and she created this amazing, well, the scarf that I have is knit with that color. She created this amazing color, and we're calling it Yarndemic, and people are going crazy for it. It's just a lot of fun, something different to do.
Definitely. Well, speaking of the pandemic and math, you've had on your Facebook page your, as you call it, mascot. How did this little guy come about?
I like to be creative in many ways, and stickers are really popular right now. So I decided I found a website where you could create your own stickers. So I just felt like 2020 needed its own yarn sticker. So I cobbled him together with, on one of those apps where you can build photographs and so forth. But anyways, I created him and made him into a sticker. And so everybody just absolutely loved the sticker. So then I started using him in like my newsletter or posting him on Instagram and things like that. And so then I thought, well, you know what? He needs to be our mascot. And then somebody else came up with the word mascot. So I thought that was pretty cute. But so right now we're having a naming contest for him. And the winner will get free yarn, of course. What else? And so we're going to take it from there. But I think he's going to remain our mascot. Even after the pandemic, we'll take the mask off of him and we'll do fun things with him. But yeah.
Yeah, I love the design, the whole thing.
Yeah, he's cute.
Have you had many name submissions for him?
Gosh, I've had so many names. Today's the deadline for submitting names. Wooly Nelson was one of them. I forget what else, but there are a lot of them.
Now and after, aside from the Yarn Discovery Tour, do you have any other classes or events planned aside from the, regular Zoom meetings?
We really don't. Everything will be based on the numbers. When the numbers start to come down and we feel that it's safe to have more people in the shop, we'll definitely start the classes back up, because I get calls daily asking, are you doing classes? Can I sign up for a knitting or crochet class? And we just don't feel it safe right now to put people together, closely together. And when you're around a table, you can't really space that far apart. So right now we're putting two tables together to make it a bigger area. I'm very fortunate to have a large space, so we can accommodate that, but I still want to be cautious.
Definitely. So my last question is, are you from Cauga Falls?
No, I'm not. Oh. Actually, when I first opened, people would come in and ask me for directions or ask me where something was, and I'd say, see Route 8 right there? This is how much I know about Cauga Falls. From Route 8 to my front door, that's all. I really didn't know a lot about the falls. I grew up in Akron, so, you know, I've been coming to the falls all my life for one thing or another, but it was to go to State Road Shopping Center or something like that, you know. So I've learned a lot more since then, though.
So, and looking at that, what's your favorite thing about working in the falls? Or favorite thing about the falls in general?
I love how supportive they are of small businesses. And when I moved in, I was the only retail. There was the Christmas shop down on down by Fleury's. Fleury's wasn't even there when I moved in. So there was me and the you know, Hidden Pearl around the corner and the vintage stores and Metropolis. And so just to see the growth downtown in the last couple of years, it's been phenomenal. And they're so supportive of the small businesses. And they've done a phenomenal job throughout this pandemic to support us and do what they can to make sure that we're okay. So I couldn't have chosen a better place to open my business. I truly believe that.
I completely agree. So is there anything else you want, you'd like to let our audience know about you or the shop?
Just that, you know, everybody needs to learn to knit or crochet. It's meditative, it's relaxing, and you have something beautiful to show for it when you're done. So everybody needs to come and take a class with us when this is all over and learn what it's all about. You won't be sorry.
I completely agree. I don't crochet very often, and I seem to be the only person I know who has found a way to stab himself with a crochet hook. But when I get into it, it's definitely worthwhile.
It is. It is. You need to keep up with it.
Well, perfect. Well, Cindy, thank you very much for being on the Fallscast. And everybody, will hopefully you'll join us next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Fallscast is a production of the Falls Free Press in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Please check out the Falls Free Press at fallsfreepress.com or on social media at facebook.com/fallsfreepress or at @falls_free on Twitter or Instagram. We thank you for listening to this episode, which was recorded and edited by Alex Hall. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell your Cuyahoga Falls friends and family so that they can listen as well.